Recordings are now started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Auction Proceeds CCWG Charter Drafting Team call held on the 14th of July, 2016. On the call today, we have Jonathan Robinson, Alan Greenberg, Brad Verd. Alan Greenberg, our board liaison is Asha Hemrajani. Our board staff advisor is Samantha Eisner. We have listed apologies from Russ Mundy and Lyman Chapman. Joining us a little later in the call will be Erica Mann in between flights. From staff, we have Marika Konings, V. Koningsfield, David Tate, Lauren Allison, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Terry. Welcome, everyone. Welcome after the Helsinki meeting. I'm actually hesitating a little. I'm a little concerned about the number of participants we have and how realistic that is to work with such a limited group. That's something we do need to think about. There are a few, I think we could certainly talk about some practicalities. I'm a little bit worried about getting into the substance with so few people on the call. The reason is because A, it's not necessarily representative, and B, there's a risk that others come back and want to argue counterpoints. So I'll be guided by any thoughts you have, but I certainly think we can work through the agenda at a high level and discuss process and practicalities. But like I say, I'm concerned about the substance. So that's my suggestion to you, that we work rather rapidly through this agenda and make sure we're all clear on what the process and practicalities are, communicate that to the group, and make sure that the group is aware that there are issues with participation. I see we don't have either Olga or Sylvia, who I think are in the same region of the world, but it doesn't feel to me like it's too late there, and we didn't hear from them. And Asha, yeah, thank you. I note that you have a similar concern about attendance. So let's accept that for what it is and think about what we can do. So the agenda you will have seen, we want to talk about the feedback in the Helsinki session and how to deal with that. We want to identify the outstanding items that need further consideration, particularly the sort of big overarching points. In the agenda, we identified this whole issue around statements of interest and conflict of interest, and then talk about a timeline which towards finalizing the charter and the sort of next steps. Okay, so I knew Olga was in Latin America. Where is Sylvia based? That was when perhaps I wasn't sure. Somehow I had Italy heard down.
Sylvia is normally in Australia.
Okay, thanks, Alan. All right, so actually there's quite a difference. I somehow had them marked down in my mind as on a similar time zone. Anyway. Thanks. So we note that we were expecting Olga to participate, and Sylvia didn't respond to the doodle, so we were unsure of whether she would participate. Okay, let's move on then to the points about the Helsinki session. Well, I mean, I think I got very positive feedback on that. A lot of people were positive about it. I know immediately prior to the Helsinki session, the board also met and discussed the charter and their views and input. And I don't believe, and maybe Asha, you can help me here, but I think I've seen some indication at or around Helsinki of the board's views, but I don't think we've shared that with the group yet. So we've really got, although we did hear from the board in the session, but I think we're due to hear in writing from the board as to their views on the draft charter. So really we've got three inputs, if you like. One, those that were recorded during the session in Helsinki. Two, those that were, and that includes board input. Two, the sort of the board input that came out of the pre-Helsinki workshop or meetings that the board held. And three, any further responses we received by email in the interim. Our current plan, in my mind, will be to integrate all of those inputs as in a sort of via public using the public comments tool and analyze each of those, work through those, form a view on those, and then take some action. But before I go into that in a little more detail, why don't I hand the mic over to you, Usha, and just let me know what your thoughts are as to when we might get that board input circulated to the group.
This is Usha. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine.
Yes.
Okay, great. Yes. I just want to say up front that I have a faulty landline. So you might suddenly hear a lot of noise and the line might get disconnected. So I apologize in advance. I've already raised this to the telephone company. Okay, so coming back to your point, Jonathan, so as you mentioned, you mentioned some of the things I was going to say, that there are three sorts of inputs. One was the written, we met with the board on the Sunday before the Tuesday session. Oh, no, pardon me, the Saturday before the Tuesday session. And we gathered, Eric and myself, we gathered a lot of the inputs and we summarized everything and we have sent that to you. And you have seen that. Is that correct, Jonathan?
I guess I've seen it privately, Usha, but I don't think it's been shared with the group. That's the issue.
Okay. Ah, okay, okay. So, I mean, that's what we would like to, I mean, that's the point, I guess. Then we have no issues with that being shared with the group. So, in fact, we think it should be shared with the group. So we just wanted to ask you how you want to do that best.
Great. Well, look, I suggest that is shared as soon as possible, and I think it should just come from you. You should just post that feedback to the group. It would be great for that to go ahead. That's my perspective.
Oh, okay. Understood. Okay. So we weren't quite clear about what you meant. Okay. So if that's what you feel that we should send it, then we can send that to the group.
Usha, let me make it very clear. The board provided two forms of input that I saw. One, a note covered the sort of deliberations and the key points, and the other was the integration of that into the charter. As I said privately, my view is that integrating those comments into the charter is premature. I think it would be useful to share the thoughts of the board so that the group can discuss these as part of its work in dealing with all of the comments in the round, and I think that will be most effective rather than attempting to integrate those into the charter right away.
Yes, what you're talking about is simply sending the document that the document that we put together and sending it to the group. That's all we're talking about at this stage.
I think so. I think that would be helpful. And
yeah.
Clear to the group. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay.
Continue, Usha, if you'd like to.
Okay. So that's that was the first area, and the second is the as you mentioned, the board comments. Comments rather from individual board members at the public session on the Tuesday in Helsinki. So you heard from myself, from Erica, and also from Steve. Most of that, what we have said is already included in the board paper, except for one point I had made, which is the in relation to a question somebody had asked about whether this was a one-time thing, one-time disbursement, or this will be a fund in perpetuity. So there was nothing really new that we covered on the Tuesday that is not in the document that we put together, in the comments that we put together. And that's all I had to say. Thanks.
Okay, great. So the group, we can look forward to receiving that. And thank you, Asha, and noting that we've been joined now by, Tony Harris and Kaveh Ranjbar. So that's good. We've got a couple more joiners. Why don't you go ahead, Alan?
Thank you very much. You covered part of what I was going to ask. I haven't seen either of those documents. They may have been sent to me, but I certainly haven't consciously looked at them. Just for clarity, the version of the charter which integrated those comments, that was simply an exercise integrating those comments, and we can assume that they are the same. Is that correct, Asha? Or substantively the same?
This is where I'm a bit confused because I'm not aware of any version of the charter with the comments integrated. Sam, are you on the call? Is Sam or America or anyone else? I'm not aware of that. I was just aware of that the document that we had put together.
Okay.
So that's why I'm not sure why you mean by two documents. There's only one.
I was referring to what Jonathan said he had seen. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, I received from Erica at some point both just at or around. Well, must have been just after your Sunday meeting, a document saying, "Look, here's what the board has worked out, and here's a version of the draft charter with these points integrated." And I was expecting, and I'm still expecting, that the document with the board's comments is circulated to the group. And as I said, my opinion is that it's premature to integrate those into the charter until the group has, you know, processed them and had a chance to debate and discuss them. And so that's really, so it would be good to get that document to the group as soon as possible.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So Sam has just responded that there is both. So there is a document and maybe the comments have been included in the next version of the charter. So if you feel that it would be too premature, then we can just circulate the comments first.
Okay. It's Alan.
And the document,
I was just trying to make sure.
The one. Yes.
Go ahead, Ashley.
Sorry.
Ahead,
yeah, I'm so sorry, Alan. Yeah. So the charter is, and I'm just reading what Sam said, and I recall because it's been 3 weeks. Sorry about that. So what we had done was we just, you know, for everybody's convenience, what we had done was taking the comments that we'd put together and just integrated into and propose some language so that so the proposed on how and where it would fit into the charter. So it was just meant for convenience. But if Jonathan, if you feel that it's a bit too early for that, it would be just as good, just as well, just as fine for myself to send you the comments first.
Okay, thank you.
And then later on, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that there weren't any gotchas in the draft charter version that weren't in the other comments. But I support Jonathan to distribute, and when we say distribute to this group, that means that implies it's public. Our mailing lists are all public. That implies the board has essentially passed down the revised charter, which they will deem to be acceptable, and that, I believe, would be a strategic error on everyone's part. So I agree with what Jonathan is saying. Go ahead. That's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Understood. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, and I think thank you, Alan. I think that really reflects my concern well. It's the sort of presumptuousness of integrating it into the charter in a way when the group hasn't even seen the comments, and it feels... that it makes sense just to let the comments be heard and understood, and then see, you know, for example, in one or more areas, there could be quite strong feelings in the group that these should be pushed back on and shouldn't be integrated. So I think that's probably the best way to do it, is just to share the input as soon as possible with the group, and let's get on with it.
Yeah. Jonathan, if I may, It has been often my practice and practice of many other people to make comments on things by, you know, t- tentatively modifying the charter, the document, as we would like to see it. So what was done is not unreasonable. However, given the sensitivity of the board passing down a document, and the board traditionally has not issued anything unless it is a consensus formal position of the board, I think that sends the wrong message. So what they're doing was not unreasonable, but given the overall environment, I think that's probably unwise. Thank you.
So, Jonathan, if I may jump in.
We may have
Hello?
Jonathan.
Hello, Jonathan?
You haven't lost me. Go ahead, Asha.
Oh, okay. All right. So, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to Alan. He took the words out of my mouth. We really thought we would be, you know, be trying to be helpful that way. So we hear both of you, and it's not an issue. We can just circulate the because I really wasn't clear what you meant in your emails. Now it's perfectly clear to me, Jonathan. So we will. I will circulate the send the comments only to the list.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm glad we've asked that. So,
is there a delay? Sorry, is there a very long delay?
I think there's always a little bit of delay on Adobe, yes.
Okay. No, I'm not using Adobe. I'm using my landline, and I just wanted to check if there's a very long delay.
There does seem to be some delay. Delays are weird in that each of us only hear the delay at the other time. So it's hard for us to judge if you're hearing delay, but from people
exactly.
talking at each other, it sounds like there is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we've established that. So I would suggest that we get that to the group as soon as possible, that board input, and moreover that we ask staff to integrated into the public comment table, so we can integrate this public comment mechanism. It's not strictly a public comment, but we're using the same tool. Alan and others, what do you think about highlighting the comment, if it's derived from the board memo and or perhaps board input at the session, highlighting it in some way differently than the other comment, just with a, not, you know, with flagging it in some way so it's evident that that's the case. Any thoughts on whether that's a problem or a good idea?
Well, remind me how we normally indicate where a comment came from.
Currently, if you look at the table in front of you now, there's no attribution.
Ah, okay. Well, maybe. I thought on tables that we've used in previous working groups, there's normally a column of where it came from. Marika has her hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika. And indeed, usually that's the practice because you know, those comments come in through public comment and it's easy to identify who has made the comments. As many of these comments were you know, taken during the session, I didn't necessarily you know, capture everyone's names or even knew everyone's names. So that's why they haven't been attributed. But if it's helpful, we can definitely attribute those that were submitted by email as well as the board comments. So we just add a column to it. But it's just important to know that for the others, of course, we can go back to the transcript and try to, you know, put together who said what, but I'm not really sure if that's really necessary also because I think some of these comments were kind of combinations of or have been combined with similar comments that were made. But for those that we can attribute, we can maybe do so.
Yeah, and maybe just have a public or something, you know, or me you know, face-to-face or something like that, some indication so they're not blank, but we're not really sure exactly where they came from. And that, I think that would be fine.
Just, Marika, then, that you attributed in your attribute comment column, you used three indicators. One is a board or board member. Two, board memo or board member. Two is is Helsinki session. And three is email, so and the email with the person from whom the comment was made, and then at least we've got some level of attribution, and we can particularly identify the board input, which will be useful. Asha, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. So I know you were asking Alan, but from my perspective, I think it would be useful to write who the board, who the comment came from, and not just attribute it to which session or whether it came from by email or not. So I know we have three sources. One is the board paper. One is the public comments from the different people on the public during the public session, and the third is, you know, email. So the emails one, as Marika mentioned, easy to identify. And on the comments with regards to the comments that were spoken at the public session, I took very comprehensive notes. I think I pretty much have everyone's name, except for two. So I think it would be worthwhile to go back to the transcript and figure out who it was, if possible. And if not, I'd be happy to, you know, add wherever the, you know, wherever it's missing, whatever I know in terms of who that person is, because I think it's worthwhile to know where those comments came from. So, and for the purposes of not singling out whether the board comment came from the board or not, I mean, it should be. If possible, why not make it treat the board as anyone else giving input into this public comment? So it's either the board, or it's Christina Rossetti, or it's Jean-Jacques Supernat. I'm just reading off the names that I have here on my notes. Edmund from Hong Kong, or the gentleman from Two Cows, that sort of thing. If we have the names, it would be useful to put them in. Thank you.
I think there's, I have a question for you, Asha. Well, first of all, three things. First of all, I said Alan or anyone else have a view, so your views, of course, welcome. Second, I'll just address Alan first because he's the vice chair of the group. The second is, to the extent that there are, that we want to attribute them, I wonder what the value of the attribution is. It may be that we're putting staff to a whole lot of work here for potentially little or no benefit. From my point of view, what I singled out was, first of all, did it come up in the Helsinki session? Did it come up later by email? And if we have it from by email, it'll be very easy to attribute it because we'll know the emailer. And third, if it came from the board, and this was my motivation for identifying board comments, in principle at least, if the board has a very strong view and we are asking the board to ultimately act on the outcomes of this group and we have acted against that, we better do that deliberately. And so that's why it felt to me to be useful to uniquely identify the board things. Now, do you see a particular – what's the value in identifying individual contributors? Thanks.
Can I come back to that, Jonathan, because my four-year-old has decided to have a tantrum now. Okay. I'm sorry. I need to step away for 1 minute, and I'll come back and answer that. Apologies.
Thanks, Asha. We'll wait for you to come back on that. In the meantime, over to Alan. Go ahead.
Thank you. I personally would like to see them, but I certainly don't want to add a huge amount of work. But I'll point out that for the Helsinki ones, we probably know who each of them was. And if indeed we don't, then we can simply put, you know, Helsinki if we didn't capture the person's name. I think Marika was referencing the previous sessions that we had where there are comments here that were made without attribution that go back a long time prior to Helsinki, which Asha may not have been thinking of. And those, I'm happy to simply put what meeting it was from, or simply say face-to-face. Again, in terms of optics, I think if we only identify things that came from the board or from specific board members in the face-to-face in Helsinki, then we're attributing an import to them, which some people will read the wrong way. Jonathan, you're of course correctly right. If we do something that is very counter to a strong board position, then we have to consider it very carefully. But what's in the document, I don't think we want to send wrong messages, and that's really what it comes down to. Marika said she didn't capture names in Helsinki, and if Asher can contribute the names, fine. If we can't, I'm happy to just have Helsinki. Anyway, go ahead.
Alan, so two points there. I mean,
Jonathan, if you're talking, we can't hear you.
Jonathan,
or is it me?
This is Jonathan. This is Terry. I see that your mic is no longer active at this time. Oh, and it just reactivated.
The connection has dropped. I don't know if he's.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just had a brief switch on the connection. Sorry. So just to come back on those two points, I think first of all, Alan, this table that we're looking at now contains only input from Helsinki and associated comment. So it's that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about all the historic comment. This is after we submitted our draft chart and set it out pre Helsinki, and that's what we have here.
My apologies. I thought it was the integrated one.
No problem. So that's what we have here. And then the question is whether there is value, and Marika says she'd have to go back through the transcript to identifying the individual contributors. Like I say, that's exactly why I asked. Your point was exactly why I asked about the board comment. On the one hand, identifying it adds unique status to it of some description. However, on the other, not knowing that something is a board comment means we may not recognize the consequences of not taking that on board. So, which is why it felt like to me like there was at least consideration to be given to identifying the board comments specifically.
Then, Jonathan, it's Alan, if I may interject. Marika says we also have comments from Sylvia there. Why don't we have another column with three points: Helsinki, meeting, Sylvia, and board comments.
That's fine by me. That's practical. And then just to be crystal clear on that, though, those that arrive by email as a result of the Helsinki meeting, because what we said to people in Helsinki was, if you haven't been given the opportunity to contribute, by all means, drop us an email. So those will be integrated with the Helsinki meeting comments. So you'd rather be simply three. One's from a drafting team member, Sylvia. Two, anything that transpired during the course of the Helsinki meeting or email immediately afterwards. And three will be board comments, whether or not they were from the board memo, or from the board member themselves. But particularly it's the board memo comments that we really want to identify, I think, because that, in a sense, will be an official communication from the board. And as Usha pointed out, in essence, those points were covered. We're essentially remade or repeated or in the meeting in Helsinki by board members, just making them in person. So that looks like a plan. They come from three different sources: Sylvia, drafting team, or Helsinki meeting, or board member. Okay, good. So we can do that, and then we're going to need to systematically work through those. And frankly, I would suggest we perhaps even start working with those offline via a document where one or more of us work through the document and make some proposals, but we may need to of course discuss them in more detail as well. Thinking if there were some other practicalities here. Certainly the agenda. There is something else that I would like to talk about, and we can come back to this at some point. It's manifest in the charter, and it's something I'd like everyone to think about, and probably particularly Usha, but it seems timely to raise this now. In the board, we are doing something unique here, which is partly why we're grappling with it a little, is that it's not normal or usual for us to have we've had board liaisons in the past, but we've had some very active participation from board members. We've also got ICANN legal and ICANN board input in quite substantial forms. This isn't just a sort of bit of a flow of information to and from. The active participation of the board members, the input of ICANN legal on legal and financial matters is substantial and influencing and shaping the charter, which is fine, and that is as it is. This group will then ultimately embark on a lot of work. We'll commission a working group that will end up doing a lot of work. And what's not clear in the charter as it stands at the moment is what the how the board will take that work. And I'd like to ask this group is, do we want to firm up and usher the question to you and Erica will be, is the board amenable to firming up its commitments as to how it deals with this work? And it seems to me that's a substantial item that we should deal with as part of the charter, and we can come back to it in the specific part of the charter, but I did want to flag that with you, and if anyone had any immediate reactions, that's fine, by all means come in with that. But as we review the charter and review the comments, I think that's a key area we need to decide on, because at the moment it's very soft that what our expectation of the board will be on the back of all of this work. And, you know, it may make some question the value of this and might set us up for a collision course that we could avoid in future if we thought more carefully about how the board might deal with this. For example, in CCWG accountability, the board made some quite specific undertakings as to how it would deal with the output of that group. And it may be that we want to talk about something more substantial like that being in the charter here. Any immediate thoughts or reactions or input on that point? Go ahead.
I guess I view board in general, when a recommendation has gone to the board, let's say on PDPs, but the same is true in other cross-community working groups in the past, and there have not been many. The board has accepted them if they have gone through a proper due process. They do a public comment, and there is not what they would perceive as a radical objection to them. The board has said, we don't do policy, and if this is what the community wants, then so be it. This one is a little bit different in that there will be aspects. It is conceivable the cross-community working group could recommend things which the board, in its fiduciary duty, does not believe should be done. You know, for instance, if we do not have proper controls on conflict of interest in handing out the money, if we do not have proper auditing, if we do not have a variety of things like that, the board could well refuse it. I would like to presume that other than those types of fiduciary duty reasons, the board is not going to be refusing to use the money as the community deems to be appropriate. How we get that kind of commitment or what words are put around it, I'm not quite sure. You know, the wording that was used in the accountability commitment, that is, if the board determines something's not in the public interest, it's not clear that with the new bylaws they can actually do that. So I think there's going to have to be some careful thought about just what is said. But I'd like to presume that short of fiduciary issues, that the board will go along with whatever the community proposes. Thank you.
Well, when we come to review that part of the charter, perhaps you could have that frame of reference in mind when you look at the wording as it currently stands and see whether it meets that test. And if others have other views relating to this, we can deal with it. But let's not duck on that for the moment. So how do we feel? We've got everyone together here. We've got a bigger group than we thought we had at the outset. Would it be helpful to start to work our way through these comments and start to get some and see whether we can make some progress on these public comment points?
Yes.
Jonathan, just a thought. Given that you're running, I presume you're running another two-hour meeting after this, perhaps we could give you and the other people who are also in that meeting a short break, so not use the full 2 hours.
Thanks for reminding me, Alan. Yes, I will set that expectation now, and that's a fair point. I would like us to run no more than 90 minutes. So let's spend, which means we'll finish at 30 minutes past the top of the hour. Let's have a look at let's see what we can do about working through some of these points. There's support from Olga and Asha, and as I suspect, to try and let's see what we can do. And I'll work through this up until for the next, say, 30, 35 minutes, and then we'll use the remaining 15 to the half past to deal with items 3, 4, and 5, or approximately along those lines. Okay, so item 1 from the public comment talks about the prohibition on using auction funds for governments and wondering why that's included. And just talking about process here, I think what we've got to do is we have an obligation to, within reason, consider all of these points raised. And I think there are a number of ways in which we can then deal with it. Clearly, what we could do is say, that's a really good point. It should be inserted into the charter. Another reaction might be, that's a really good point, but we considered it and dismissed it a while ago for good reason. Therefore, we won't include it. Or some kind of hybrid. And that's really what the obligation we have here is to systematically go through these, take a view, and take an action. What it doesn't mean is that we have to absorb every single one of these points into the charter. I think we have to give them reasonable consideration and decide whether, based on the current view or work we've done previously, whether it makes sense. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'm talking on point number one. So if you want any further comment on the general one, then I'll stand back for a moment.
Okay. Well, since you are vice chair of the group, you may want to comment on the satisfaction or not, your satisfaction with that process, and then go straight into the subsequent point.
I totally agree on the process. Okay, on point number one, you said why is it included, and the actual text is why is it not included. I do not believe we actually have a prohibition on governments, and the answer to why is it not included is twofold from my point of view. Number one, that's very much in my mind a CCWG decision, that who is eligible to apply for the grants or whatever it is we call the use of these auction funds. And number two, my experience with in at large, where we're looking at organizations, we don't have a prohibition that government is involved, because in many small countries and developing nations, the government is involved in everything at some level, and if not the government, then government people. So you want to be careful on making a prohibition that sounds right in the West, but does not necessarily work in other countries. So I think when the CCWG looks at this, they're going to have to use a little bit of finesse and make sure their wording is appropriate. I don't think it's something that we want to consider in this in our level. Thank you.
Okay, so thanks, Alan, and Olga is supportive of that point of view. I think for the sake of expediency, your points on the substance are interesting, and if helpful, by all means, go ahead and do them. But what I think the essence of your point is that the drafting team's view should be that this is not for the drafting team. This is for the CCWG, and so that will be our view, and the action would be pass this on. This is something for the CCWG to consider.
Yeah, I support that. I was just referencing the other things, because if other people in this group decided it was a drafting team job, they're taking on a bigger job than they might have otherwise suspected. That's the only reason I added the at-large perspective.
That's helpful. Okay, so I'm going to move us to the next one. Essentially, and I note that Olga agrees with you, and I'll take a lack of disagreement as agreement. So, by all means, if you think somebody's made a point that you strongly disagree with, come on. But if for the sake of moving us through this wish list, let's just keep it ticking over then. So how broadly defined is lobbying? Some NGOs would advocate as part of their activities. Would that be considered lobbying? Some examples have been included in the memo. Yeah, I remember this point, and this is really the definition of lobbying. I don't know if Sam, I think you responded at the time, and maybe you want to come in on this point, Sam Eisner. This comes down to, you may have a clear definition in the US, but it may be more difficult to define lobbying elsewhere, or Alan, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I was confused by this issue when it was raised because I thought we had a prohibition on using our funds for lobbying as opposed to the organization does lobbying in part of its other life. Now, I understand money is fungible, but, you know, my understanding was we were saying you cannot allocate the funds for lobbying. Not that the organization can't do any lobbying in other parts of its life, but I guess a clarification from Sam would be useful.
Alan, I'll pop the microphone straight.
Thanks. This is Sam Eisner. So there is the way that it's been drafted into the language currently and from the memo that was circulated, there has been a recommendation that we just don't allow the money to be used in ways that are for lobbying. Now, the concern that was expressed in the meeting, as well as concerns that have already been raised in prior drafting team calls, is that we shouldn't be developing rules that are just U.S.-centric. And so what we heard from people across the room, I think, and also we've touched on it a bit in our prior conversations is, you know, we know that there's going to be a need to expand that definition. So the definition that exists today is about it is a U.S.-centric rule because that's where it comes from. And so it focuses on a U.S. definition of lobbying. However, we don't want to get into a situation where we're creating differential expectations of those who are receiving the funds, either based on their geographic location. And so one of the things that came up during that session was that we're going to need to, at the drafting, or not at the drafting team level, but at the CCWG level, understand the scope of prohibitions that we're going to make applicable across the board so that we have a clear line of activity that is not permitted by any of the people who receive the fund because any money that group would then spend on those types of activities, it winds up getting imputed back to ICANN ultimately and gets considered as part of ICANN's lobbying activities. And once that triggers a certain threshold, ICANN loses its not-for-profit status. So it's this very broad view that the government, the U.S. government, takes on lobbying activities that we need to translate into something that can be applicable across the world for wherever the recipients of the money might be, and then make that just an objective standard requirement for whoever might get it.
Thanks, Sam. That, to me, is helpful, and it feels like what that translates to is two objectives from the drafting team's point of view. One, that the drafting team specifies that lobbying must be prohibited to the extent that it protects the tax-exempt status of ICANN. And two, that such a prohibition should be applied generically so as to be fairly applied across the world and not be entirely U.S.-specific. And I guess in general that those are applied, that work is done by the CCWG, and we just give the direction at those two high-level points. Thanks, Sam. I note your check mark. So hopefully that helps with the language in responding to this point. And Usher, did you agree, disagree, or have something different to add to that?
Yes, I did. This is Usher. Thank you, Jonathan. So if I recall, the gentleman who brought up this point, so I hear what Sam just said and your summary of Sam's comments in that we should protect our nonprofit status, and we should not have a U.S.-centric definition of lobbying. But the other issue which that gentleman brought up when he raised this in the public session was not only a U.S.-centric definition, but also there's different types of definition even within a country. So there's political lobbying, there's also lobbying for a particular cause. So in his case, he gave the example of child safety online. He says, would my organization be defined as a lobbyist because I lobby for child safety online? So I'm just wondering, in addition to a non-U.S. Centric definition, what about the definition on types of lobbying, the different types and the samples of lobbying? I agree that maybe this is not the should not be in the scope of the charter, but I just wanted to remind everyone this was the gentleman's comments when he brought this up.
Sure. Alan, did you want to respond?
I'm not responding to that, although it my question involves that. I'm still rather fuzzy, or at least my understanding is fuzzy on two things. It's still not clear to me if what Sam was saying, that an organization that does lobbying, whatever the definition of lobbying we come up with, is not allowed to accept funds, we are not allowed to grant them funds, or we are not allowed to grant them funds if they are planning to use those funds for lobbying. And, you know, I can accept either, but it's not clear to me which of those prohibitions it is. That's number one. Number two, my understanding of why we are worrying about lobbying is because it could impact our U.S. tax-exempt status. So I would have thought we are looking for a U.S.-centric definition of lobbying. The fact that Tunisia may add some completely other thing as under their definition of lobbying does not going to affect, I don't think, would affect our U.S. tax status. It's lobbying of the kind that is prohibited in the U.S. that we are not allowed to do for other countries as well. At least that was my reading of why we have lobbying there. So I guess I'd like some clarification on those two issues. Is it the organization lobbying or use of our funds for lobbying? And why is it we're not looking for a U.S.-centric definition of lobbying, which I understand is narrower than many others? Thank you.
Alan, I thought I covered that with my two overarching objectives. The first objective, which is what I feel seems to both deal with this question from a drafting team point of view and give the appropriate work to the CCWG. The first objective is to meet the requirement of not compromising the tax status. How that's translated in practice is the work of the CCWG. We just want to make sure that we give that direction. Second, in applying that, exactly as you say, that very U.S.-centric consideration, we need to find a mechanism to apply that uniformly across prospective applicants. Because what you don't want to do is prohibit, in the example given, some form of child protection charity in the U.S., you prohibit them from applying, yet you don't prohibit one in Argentina, for example, from applying, because as you know, Olga highlighted, you know, it's different across the world and so on. So that's why I felt those two overarching principles were important. First, you protect the tax status. Second, you make it in some way equivalent across prospective applicants. That felt to me like the way of okay. Dealing with it.
Jonathan, a follow-up. The reason I'm pursuing it is if we indeed know the answer is reasonably clear now, that's an if, then we should put it into our charter and not make the CCWG go over that territory again. If it is not clear to us now, then you're correct. We just put lobbying in and let them worry about what it means.
I suppose, in my mind, I wouldn't attempt to define it. I would just say lobbying to the extent that it compromised the tax exempt status. And then it's up to the lawyers and accountants to define that properly. And if we need expert help to create that definition in the CCWG, then so be it.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Like from reading Sam's comment that she feels similarly, Alan and Asha. Okay, great. Thanks, both. So there's Marika, can I just check in with you? Are you happy that you're getting the sort of answers you might require to put into this thing as we talk into this table and talk things through? And thanks, Tony, for your point in the chat, recognizing that will work.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm trying to follow along on my own document, and of course I will circulate that back to the working group after to the drafting team after the call, so you can all check as well that I captured the comments as well as the agreed action appropriately.
Thanks, Marika. And to assist you, I will try and do that sort of capturing and summarizing it so that when you go back and you've got the detail there. Asha, come.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Ellen just mentioned something that I thought was a really good idea, and this is not in relation only to this point, but everything else really. It can be applied to everything else, which is Ellen mentioned, if we know something, if we can define something specifically now, we should do it now, as opposed to kicking the can down to the CCWG. And whereas in this particular case, we've agreed on those two broad principles, which makes a lot of sense to me. It might be helpful to kind of, and I'm just putting this idea out to the group. If we can talk about, if we can summarize rather these challenges or these scenarios that we've thought about, for instance, this child safety online, and document it somewhere so that when the CCWG does deliberate this, and for example, on the child safety online issue, Sam mentioned in the chat, she said, Asha, instances like that would be addressed when uniform principles that can be established and applied across organizations. So I'm assuming that the CCWG will have to come up with these uniform principles. So it might be helpful for us to write some notes for them and let them know, okay, these are things that we didn't dig too deeply in, but when the CCWG does its deliberations, this is something you might wish to consider looking into. Just a general idea, not only in relation to this point, but in other points, for all other points as well. Thanks.
Thanks. It's a good point, and I suppose, Asha, there's a delicate line to walk there between the fact that we've given things some due consideration and should impart that thought and pass that on, and I ideally we capture that in this context as part of the drafting team view, and then the action taken is rather simpler. It says we passed the CCWG in these two principles. But I take your point. It is to the extent that we've done that, it is useful to communicate that. One slight reservation is that we are a very small, whilst we're reasonably representative, we're ultimately a small team, so which is why we've got to walk this line between not doing too much and trying to hand it over. But I take your point. If we've had substantive discussions on it, it's a shame just to lose that and let the drafting team start, the working group start. And then Alan makes the point, of course, that at least some of us, if not all of us, might move over to the working group in any case. Okay, thanks. That's a good point. The four and five both deal with the lobbying point, which I think we've done in quite a lot of detail now. And then point six is how tightly does the charter restrict fund allocation in relation to the mission? Many of the conversation about the new mission statement with regard to the within the DT to determine what that means for the chart, especially with regards to scoping. Well, I suppose there's two different points there. There's one is the mission, and the second, is the mission a moving target at this stage? I think it's settled, as far as I know, from the account work of the accountability team, and then how tightly does this charter restrict it? And I seem to recall seeing some discussion online where we've got some further discussion to have in any event about this, how tightly we tie the work of the group into the mission. So I guess our view here is that we will. How tightly does the charter restrict fund allocation in relation to the mission? Well, I guess this is something we need to just feel like this is something we shall and will consider as we rework through the charter. Thanks, Brad. Noted that you have to leave, and we'll see you on the next call. Thanks for your involvement on this one.
All right.
Any other comments about point six or any thoughts? Go ahead.
Jonathan, it's Alan. My only comment is this is going to be clearly a key one that will make or break the CCWG's recommendations being accepted by the board. So it's going to require a lot of, a lot of discussion on what can legally, and that word is in quotes, be allowed. And on top of that, there's a philosophical one that some of us have pushed very hard for as broad a definition as our mission can bear, and other people have said we want as narrow a mission as possible, narrow a scope as possible. So there's both a philosophical question plus the board's perspective of what they can legally do without endangering the corporation. So it's going to be a substantive discussion within the CCWG.
Yeah, and Alan, I take your point, and I think so from my point of view right now, as far as the CCWG is, as far as the drafting team is concerned, let me be clear. I agree with you. It'll be substantive in the CCWG. It will also be something which I don't think we've done our job yet in the drafting team on this. We've still got some more work to do. So I guess our answer is that on six and seven, really, or six certainly, is that the drafting team will give thorough consideration to these points. I mean, that's you could just recognize the value of the point and say we will give clear consideration to it.
Fine.
Now, we've lost a couple of people or are losing a couple of people, and so I think we're back to where we were. I think we've dealt with the first 6 points on substance, and my temptation is, for a variety of reasons, to now we'll come back to this, and I would encourage everyone now that you have this table, and this table will be shortly updated to have the board input in addition to this. My suggestion is we pause this activity now. Everyone gives some consideration to it in the meantime, potentially posts any responses to the group, and we'll continue this exercise at the next meeting. And in the meantime, I suggest we go on and deal with 3, 4, and 5 for the purposes of this meeting. How does that sound? Alan, are you okay with that?
Yep.
Okay, great. Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Usha. What I'd like to do in item three, it's just see if there are, and this will probably require ultimately a walkthrough on the charter, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to capture a couple of these things on the items that need further, substantive items really that need further DT consideration. And I feel like we've identified two. At least. One is our position on adherence to the mission, which is the point we were talking about a moment ago. And, this whole point about is it in line with, not inconsistent with, and so on. It feels to me like that job is not yet done. Should to answer your question, agenda should be visible to your top right of the screen. And second point that clearly needs further consideration is this whole thing around how we deal with conflict of interest at the different stages of the process including any specific requirements we put on statements of interest. And it's clear, and when you look at the board input, which is why we can't get into the substance of it now, that the board, and but you would have heard that in Helsinki, the board has some very strong views on this. And my opinion is that those views have value, and I've heard them, and I understand that there is a coherent argument there, but it does contradict with an open working group type of practice. And so really it's there's quite a meaty issue to think about and decide at what stage and what conditions we impose on participation in and around the conflict of interest provisions. And there's the sort of hard line, if you like, that says if you believe or are likely to have any, you'll essentially disqualify yourself from participating in any ultimate application of funding if you participate in the working group, or and that's the firmest line you could take, and you're essentially disqualified from participating in any way. Or you say that's not how it works at ICANN. Working groups are open to everyone. We want clear and specified, and I think this is where we got to. This is the only alternative. I think it felt to me like we were very clear that we wanted enhanced and standardized statements of interest. I don't think anyone's in any doubt about that. But the question is that enough, or are we going to take a harder line view that says anyone who participates in the CWG will automatically preclude their future participation in application for funding? So that's going to be the nut to crack, and I think that's something that certainly seems to be one. Are there any other that anyone's aware of at the moment overarching? I mean, some of them we might flush out as we go through this table again in future, but would anyone like to flag any other points that they're aware of overarching or substantial interest? I suggest we have a running list like that, and we'll work with that and keep that updated, and so we know that these are the issues we have to deal with. As far as item four is concerned, the timeline for finalizing the charter, I worked on this a little bit with Marika, which she then shared with Alan and myself, and we have a draft. Marika, did that go to the group, or is it not? If we see it now, will that be the first time?
This is Marika. I circulated this morning as well to the drafting team.
Okay, thanks, Marika. So I'd like any comments or thoughts on this, but essentially what this does is targets commissioning the CCWG ahead of the ICANN 57 meeting in November, such that the first meeting of the CCWG can take place during that November ICANN 57 meeting. That feels to me like a good target to have and a nice potential outcome. How do others feel about that kind of target and that timeline? Is that something that you would like to aspire to? Come in, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I thought everyone may have had a chance to look at it in detail, just to maybe briefly outline that the two options here are, to a large extent, the same. The only difference is that option one, as Jonathan says, foresees that the charter is submitted in the course of September to the different ICANN SOs and ACs with the question of, you know, if they can identify whether there are any pertinent issues in there that would prevent them from adopting the charter. If there are none, the adoption would go relatively smoothly, and that would allow for convening the CCWG prior to ICANN 57, with the first meeting taking place there. The option two foresees, or basically anticipates, what would happen should some of the ICANN SOs and ACs come back and say, well, there are actually issues in there that we just cannot live with or would prevent us from adopting the charter, which may require some additional work from the drafting team, and as such, that may then line up a potential approval in at ICANN 57, assuming that those issues are able to be addressed to the satisfaction of all the ICANN SOs and ACs.
Yes, Marika, thank you for reminding me of that or highlighting it. Yeah, and so the key point here to think about is what we're proposing to do here is during that mid-August timeframe is distribute the charter to the chartering organizations and say, not we want public comment on substantial items here, but what we need to know is, are there any showstoppers in the charter that are going to cause you a problem? Because what the alternative would be shipping the charter out to the chartering organizations, a portion of the chartering organizations ratify it and come back and tell us that's fine, and a portion, one or more, say no, it's not, and then we end up with a problem. So the idea would be to share it with them and ask for showstoppers. Alan, what are your thoughts?
I'm happy with that, but I'm looking at the first couple of lines. We have some substantive issues to discuss, and we are saying that after two more meetings, we will have a text ready to distribute, and I'm not sure that's going to be the case, so I think we may want to consider weekly meetings instead of biweekly meetings.
Yeah, that's a good point, and the challenge is, of course, it's Northern Hemisphere summer, so there's going to be times off and so on, so some comments on that would be helpful in addition. How do others feel about the pace of work and what we try and do? Asha, you asked for further explanation of option two.
Not further. Sorry, I just want. I didn't hear part of what Marika was saying. It just it blanked out, so that's why I wanted her voice muted on my end. So I wanted her to say it again, and I have another comment to make.
Thanks, okay, Asha. So Marika just commented in chat response, and then come in with your other point.
Okay, if I may jump in now with my other comment. So I agree with what Ellen just said. Not in terms of increasing the frequency, because I think it will be difficult because it is the summer break. But I feel we still have a lot of substantive issues to discuss. So we may not be able to cover all of that in the next 2 to 3 meetings. So I would like to build in more buffer into this, and really ask if it would be good to have Hyderabad as a goal, but can we consider the option of not of the possibility of a more time buffer into our schedule, so that if we are not able to complete by Hyderabad, if we're completing, for instance, by the end of the year or maybe by the next meeting, it still won't be the end of the world. I want to build in more time buffer in here, because I think we need to take the time to do this properly.
Sasha, fair enough. What I suggest we do, here's how I propose we deal with that. Right now, this is an ambitious, acknowledged, it's an ambitious timetable, but it's at least a working document. So let's get on with our next meeting, and even, and then adjust the timetable. I think we can regularly publish the timetable and see how we go with it as we go. And, you know, I think what we can also lean on staff a little bit and ask for their help, so that we can sort of integrate as we process these comments and do this work, we start to integrate it into the charter. And if you know, we end up with relatively uncontroversial points or things that are easy to deal with, we can weave those in and try. I guess one other thing we can do to make this work is try and do work offline as well and be as responsive as possible on the email lists and so on. Asha, your hand is still up. Would you like to come back in with some more audio comment, or are you okay?
Yes, I just wanted to agree with what you said, that if you're, you know, on the regular updating of the schedule and try to build in some buffer into this. And also I wanted to ask if are you intending to share this publicly, or this is just meant to be a working document for us internally? Because I think it would be best if it's something that's internal to us for now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, all of our work is public, so anyone could look at this and see it, but I don't think we're intending to do anything more than share it within our own, within this group, which is transparent and public, but not intending to broadcast it other than that.
Yeah, I meant broadcast, not public, sorry. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. Okay, great. So we'll work along those lines. So that's really the timeline and ambition for trying to, and acknowledge that it is ambitious, but let's see what we can do and see how we can get on with that. And then the final point was next meeting and next steps. The way in which we've been doing this is we currently plan to meet more or less every 2 weeks. Or is it 3 weeks? So I think it's every 2 weeks we've been meeting. I just don't see why there's a big gap between now and the next meeting. Maybe you can help me there, Marika. Why is there? Oh, no, this is the, sorry. This is the, no,
it,
there's
it
no
is
big
2 weeks.
Gap. Apologies.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sasha. Okay. So, and what we've been doing is, and this is how we propose to work going forward, is we simply put a doodle poll out for that time, rather than forcing everyone to a standard time which may or may not work for you. And we should try and be sensitive, of course, to the different time zones as well. How does that work? Rather than just doing stock rotation, that we just put out a doodle ahead of, you know, so for example, tomorrow we would put out a doodle for the next meeting. I must say there's one other detail I have to flag with you. I'm going to really struggle if we continue to do this on Thursdays, and so I would like to propose that we do these on Wednesdays. I've got the next, and Alan's in the same boat, I think, perhaps others, maybe Olga, I'm not sure who else is, but for the next 6 weeks or so, we've got regular CWG meetings that might be two-hour meetings that might be taking place on Tuesdays and Thursdays, for which I have to chair. So if the plan then is to I must say I would love to not do anything over the summer. It would be quite nice to, but I wonder what we can do. But that's the plan, is suggesting to do it on Wednesdays and doodle people. And I think what we need is, if you feel you're being prejudiced in some way by these doodles, just flag it. Let us know, because the intention is to try and make it flexible to accommodate different people. Because some people are, you know, notwithstanding their time zone, some people are morning people or evening people or have other commitments. No, Olga, believe me, I grew up in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm totally sympathetic to the fact that it's winter, and I acknowledge that there's reference to Northern Hemisphere winter here as summer, but I get it. You're willing to work 24 hours a day on this. You're not in summer at the moment. So the other thing is whether we do two-hour calls. How do people feel about two-hour calls, 60-minute, 90-minute, or 2 hours? Any strong feelings about that? Feels like 60 minutes isn't enough to get things done. So we need 90 or 2 hours probably, but Usher, 90, Olga's happy with two. I think we'll default to 90 then, or, I mean, the other option is to block out the two-hour slot and try and work to shorter than that. Okay, let's work with 90. I think 90 is not a bad way of doing things. There's a limit to how much any of us want to be sitting on a conference call. Let's try and work with a 90.
Jonathan, it's Alan.
90 every second. Go ahead.
Sorry, we do seem to have a delay. I would support doing the doodle for 2 hours and targeting 90 minutes.
Okay, I'm good with that, especially given that we've got quite a lot to get through, and I'll do my best to drive us through in the 90 minutes, as we have done today and will do. So let's block out a two-hour slot, but try and complete it in 90 minutes, no more than 90 minutes when we do the work. And these will be days at a mutually convenient time. And if you have substantial issues with the time, if you feel you're being prejudiced and it's regularly coming outside of a convenient time for you, please let us know and we'll work with you. All right, good. Thanks, everyone. I think that's it for now. Any other business, anything else anyone needs to or wishes to raise? Okay, wonderful. Thanks to those who were able to be here today and contribute. Much appreciated. And we'll see you on in approximately 2 weeks' time.
Thank you.
And don't forget we need you on the mail list as well. Thank you.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Lance, the operator, if you could stop all recordings.